ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Just a side point on. It means you have the two opinions that from Radharani you first get Lalita, then from Lalita then you get Vishakha. Another opinion is that from Radharani you get Vishakha, then after that Lalita. So you have the element that the Hladini, when the son of Krishna, shines on the Hladini potency, then the shadow is simultaneous. Right? Does that make sense? Because Vishakha is born at the same moment as Srimati Radharani. And she's known as Anuradha, and she looks just the same. So you get that understanding. You know? So, and that's the element of the Sandini. Means we're all talking within Hladini here. That from the Sandini is the field, then from that you operate the field, which is the chit. So that would be Lalita. But at the same time as you have that from the Sandini to the Hladini, then when that's in place, then the chit potency manifests. Does that make sense? So whether you're taking it by tattva or by rasa. But in any case, we see Vishakha is there before Lalita. Does that make sense? Right? But in any case, who's there first or not, the jivas are expansions of the chit potency. So that means that's why we're under her protection, Lalita, because she's that element of chit. Okay. So... Then continue. Where were we on this? Verse 2, statement. Did we do this one? No. Okay. Verse 2, the statement, then we're on page 20 or 19, I guess, depending on your volume. Verse 2 of the Jiva Goswamis, the statement, Nimisha only. Devotional service should be performed is, Nimisha, also seen, discussed in the conversation of Srila Sukadeva Goswami Maharaj Parikit. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, in Srimad Bhagavatam 212, those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O Emperor. The phrase griheshu grihamedinam hints that the people described here are materialists far from spiritual life. The word atma tattva here means the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is so because of what will be explained in the next verse. Aha. Verse 5, he explains, Srimad Bhagavatam 215. O descendant of King Bharata, one who desires to be freed from all miseries must hear about, glorify, and also remember the Personality of Godhead, who is the Super Soul, the Controller, and the Savior from all miseries. Why should we glorify him? Because he is the most lovable object who fulfills the needs of all and who is the ultimate liberation in devotional service. All that being so, we should certainly hear about him. Sridhar Swami comments, by using the word Sarvatma here, the speaker says that the Lord is most dear to everyone. By the word Ishwara, Nimisha, he fulfills the needs of all. He says that the Lord's will cannot be thwarted. By the word Hari, Nimisha, fearless, he says that the Lord removes the bondage of the repeated material existence. The phrase Abhayam Ichata here means they who desire liberation. Nimisha. Now Srila Jiva Goswami explains that we should not take the universal form as the ultimate shelter. Rather, we must take shelter of the super soul. So, basically, if one isn't, something is accomplished,
because of focus. If there's not focus, it will always be changing, right? Now, if someone's focus is a little bit more, we'll take it that we call it focus, right? Just like they're performing yoga, but it's not connected with the Supreme. But because it has an elements of the mechanics of the yoga, we call it yoga. But technically, we know yoga means connecting with the Supreme. Does that make sense? So you have these, you would have these like dual application, where you have the ultimate and then you have the temporary. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let us say we go to the prison. And if you talk to the warden, you know, who are your good prisoners? You know, who's good here? They'll give you a list of people who, you know, follow the rules and do everything and make minimal trouble. Right? Isn't it? So, in that perspective, these people are good. These people are okay, and these ones are bad, right? But they're all criminals, so they're all bad. Does that make sense? So, focus is only if it's focused on the Supreme Lord. That's focus, because that's eternal. And that focus means that the result you'll be getting will always be devotional. And it will always be consistent, means that it's always connected to the Lord. Does that make sense? Okay. Now the materialist, the same principle applies. You want to get anywhere in anything, you have to be focused. The gross materialist, even he wants to do it, he has to be focused. But how long is that focus? It's temporary. So those with a longer term temporary focus are successful in the material world. Right? He focuses for 30 years and he builds up his business as an empire until he hits midlife crisis and then becomes weird and goes off and starts mountain climbing or something like that. Does that make sense? You know? So the point is we'll call that focus, but it's not. It just depends upon your perspective, right? If you're focused and you're getting something done, then the people who are getting nothing done, you'll say they're not focused. Because they try this, they try that, they don't know who they are, and they're always changing their position. Right? But, from your perspective, they're unfocused. But from a higher perspective, even the more focused materialist is still unfocused. Because within this lifetime, he'll change directions a few times. And then from lifetime to lifetime, he changes directions. Does that make sense? So therefore, having focus, only the devotee can do it. Practically speaking, only the devotee can be successful in the material world. They're the only ones. Others have some temporary, but the pandavas, right? They're always successful. Life after life. Every life there. It means every Kali Yuga, you have the pandavas there, and it's working. Right? Right? Every Treta Yuga and Ramachandra's pastimes, Hanuman's there. He's successful every time. Right? That goes on 1,000 times in the day of Brahma, and then, you know, so that means half a million times in the length of Brahma's lifetime, Hanuman's successful. Every time. Why? Because focus. And anything that's not going quite right, that's because it's a material world. Material world is, you know, has the problem. That makes sense? But they're always successful because they're emperors and Krishna's there. They're in the forest, Krishna's there. Does that make sense? So he's bringing out, is therefore, this griheshu grihamedinam. Means grihamedi means there's the stick. You've all seen, you heard it. There's you've maybe seen the villages in the middle of the courtyard between all the houses. There's a big fat stick. They tie the bulls onto there, and they walk around in a circle. So they'll put down the dal or other things, and the cows will walk on it and husk it. So it's called a medi. So griha medi means the griha, the house itself, is the stick. Everything circles around that. Does that make sense? That's a griha medi. The definition of griha medi is not disgusting, intoxicated, meat-eating, fornicating, you know, complete madman. That's the definition we would like to give to it, because it makes it very safe for us. Why? Because that means we can never be a griha medi. Right? So Griha Medes are put very far away, nonsense, karmi, rascal, demon, disgusting, you know, however many adjectives and other things you could add to it. Right? But Griha Medes simply means your house is the center of your activities and everything, including God, circles around that. That's a Griha Medes. You understand? They can be disgusting, nonsense, rascal, you know, filthy, whatever. Yes, they are also. But it goes up to the point of nice, high-class, first-class Brahmins who follow all the rules and regulations, but simply for the perfection of their household life. Everything they do is perfectly in line with Shastra. But Krishna is not the center. That's at one end of Griha Medes. And at the other end, we have our nice, disgusting, rascal nonsense. Does that make sense? Problem is this definition may cut a little bit close to the bone. Because then we find that even in our own life, sometimes we ourselves may be Griha Medes. Does that make sense? But if your main purpose is to please Krishna, then it's not so much of a worry, because your purpose is to move forward and be a grihastha. Right? So it's progressive. So however much Griha Medes we are today, by the practice of Krishna consciousness, tomorrow will be less, and the next day less than that. So it's not a worry. But it doesn't mean that we're comfortable and just sit back, that, oh, I'm the devotee and the Griha Medes is something else. No, it's just like lust, anger, greed, envy, all these attachment. These things are there, but we're working on them so that we move beyond them. Does that make sense? Right? In other words, you have to keep this dual aspect, right? It's our philosophy, right? Is that we're inspired by the directness and the simplicity of Krishna consciousness, but at the same time as we understand the seriousness of it. Right? In other words, whatever position we come from, no matter how distant or fallen, it doesn't matter, because if you connect to Krishna, you're connected. Right? It doesn't matter if I have a 6-inch wire running the electricity or a 2-mile wire, the electricity gets there. Right? Does that make sense? So if it's connected, it is connected. So that's the niceness of it. So we can be inspired that, yes, this process will work even for me, no matter how far away I am from the Krishna. Right? But at the same time, we're not lazy in that, oh, it doesn't matter because I'm connected. No, we're connected, but how much are we connected? Right? So we're connected, great, that's first class, but we want to be more connected. So then, day to day, moment to moment, we have to be trying to make that connection better. Does that make sense? So in this, there's a balance between reality and lack of the mode of ignorance. Right? Means we're in other words, it's approached from the mode of goodness. That's why it's knowledge. Right? You know, I'm so disgusting, I'm this, I might as well forget it, and this and that. That's not knowledge. That's ignorance. Right? Why? Because we think I should be I am something special, but somehow or another I'm not manifesting my full natural potency, potential, and so therefore, you know, I'm disgusting. Right? That's the translation of what is actually there when you think, oh, I'm so useless and I should give up. You know what I'm saying? I'm the best in the world, no one's recognizing it, and somehow or another it's not happening, and because of this I can't handle it, and so therefore I'm just going to throw it in. It's an emotional reaction to why they're not standing and giving me ovations. You know, for, you know, what I just did. Understand? So that's ignorance. Knowledge is, okay, these problems are there, these things are there, so now what do I do about it? Right? You know, I walk into the kitchen, there's some dirty pots in the sink. I go, oh, okay, these need to be washed. You know, they shouldn't be there, it's dirty, it shouldn't be like that, so what do? I wash them. Then I wash them, and I put them away, and then I move on. Right? That's the mode of goodness. Mode of ignorance, walking, oh, the kitchen is dirty, oh, it's always like this, there's nothing, what can we do? Oh, all this, that, and roll on the ground, and then go to the room and pout, and then the whole day, and nothing will happen. The dishes won't be washed. Because if they're washed, I have nothing to lament about, so I can't put myself in a special position. Right? And I am the center of all lamentable, yes, lamentation, or lamentableness, or, you know, like, you understand? Think about it. You know, you can think back of days when, you know, you had bad hair days, and then check if what I'm saying is not actually the podity behind it. Does that make sense? So the whole point is this mode of goodness means I'm going to see it as it is, but not be disturbed by it. It'll be sobering, but it's not lamentable, because no means no position in the material world is too bad, right? You could say, no, I'm so bad, I'm beyond that. But then that's a very proud position. You think, you're thinking, I am worse than Jagai Madai. But it was very clearly made that nobody was worse than Jagai Madai. It's every last rule that could possibly ever be broken anywhere, anytime, any place was broken by them. And to the volume that Yamaraj, you know, had to come to Lord Chaitanya and say, can you please do something about these guys? Because I can't, it's out of my jurisdiction. Right? The amount of sin they have done, I can't even calculate it. Right? If you made an unlimitedly bottomless pit and all the pieces of, you know, paper that Chitragupta writes on everybody's sins was all taken and thrown into that pit, still we would have papers left over that won't go inside. Right? So these guys are bad. Right? And they became nice, humble devotees. Even after they're devotees, there were other devotees that were still afraid of them because they had such a reputation. So Lord Chaitanya then had to make the statement, whoever criticizes them will get their sins. Right? So that's why it's also very dangerous, the moralistic position of, oh, this one did this, that one did that, because it's all right. It is true. They did this, they did that, they are sinful. It is true. But as soon as you say that, those sins that they had come to you, and they're purified. So you've done great service to the Vaishnava community. So know it, do not feel critical or bad or feel bad towards those who are the local village, you know, gossips and fault finders. They're doing the community a great favor. Why? Because they're taking on all the sins of the Vaishnavas of the community and purifying everybody. Of course, according to the definition of this chapter, we should not associate very closely with them because they have so much, they're taking on all the sins of the community, and we wouldn't want to pick up that bad, you know, that bad association, to pick up those qualities or habits they have. So one should avoid them, but one should not feel bad or feel revengeful or feel, you know, that there's a lack of justice or something here. You should be very happy because every time they make a comment about you, they take on your bad qualities. But if you criticize them back, then you take it back. You know, it just keeps going back and forth. You know, it's like you know, ping pong or something. Does this make sense? Like that, yeah. So they take on your, yes.
Does the same thing happen in the mind?
Same thing happen in the mind. If you speak it, that's when it's the fullest. In the mind, it simply pollutes the mind. But you don't get the reaction, but it pollutes the mind. You know, that's the thing. In the Kali Yuga, until you speak it, you don't get the effect. But if you think about it, it pollutes the mind. But if you think about doing good things in the mind, you get the result. On other ages, you have to do it. Like that, so it's reversed. Like that. Okay, so I guess enough, Grihamedi bashing here. Yes.
So, you were saying that nobody is ever more sinful than Jagai Madai. What about Narottam Das, who is saying kind of that he's more sinful than Jagai Madai? Is he telling a lie? Or?
Why does he have to be telling a lie? Okay. I'll give you an example. Prabhupada quotes from, I forget who it was. Who's the guy that, oh, he's gone. He opened the Sanskrit College in Calcutta. Forget. He was one of the big Bengali intellectuals back in the 1800s. So he said, every husband has the right to say his wife is the most beautiful woman. Okay? Like that. Do you understand? No. Does anybody understand?
Yeah.
Okay. See, your experience is facts or your feelings?
Feelings.
Right? Feelings. Okay. So, by facts, Jagai Madai, you know, outweigh everybody. Right? We know Narottam Das Thakur is one of the Lord's associates. So, therefore we know, but that's his feeling. He actually feels like that. So then one can say, jump in immediately, so therefore it's alright if I feel like I'm the most fallen. But the point is do you want to put yourself on that platform? Because if it's actually felt, that's good. But the point is then we have to be sure that do we need to speak it to others? And by us speaking to others, are they benefiting or are we benefiting that they're hearing, oh, he's so humble? You know? You ever seen, you know, devotees play, who's the most humble, you know, who can touch the other's feet, and they're practically killing each other and running away and laughing and joking and like that. It's a good game. It's nice. It's well intended. But it's not necessarily a manifestation of humility. It's just, it's generally good. Traditionally, it would be called tag. You know, who can touch the other person's feet and run away without being touched back, you know? And whoever wins, you know? You know, it's like, how you say, no, I'm the most, no, I'm the most, no, I'm the most. One time, Achyutananda was on a Air India flight, and he went to the back of the plane to go to the bathroom. And back there, all the toilets were full, but one was open. And there were two Indian gentlemen there, standing on each side of the door, and each one is saying, no, you first. They're like, no, you first. The other said, no, I insist, you go first. Yeah, no, like this, you go first. And Chutananda said, I'll go first. Okay? So, yeah. That was the Chutananda.
Would that be utility in the principle?
Yeah. Okay, so, in other words, they're nice. They're nice sentiment, but the reality is maybe something else. You know what I'm saying? We're so humble that we don't actually take the other person's consideration. one time there was somebody, senior man, he had his servant, and he had a godbrother over, and he asked, served him, I think, something to drink. Afterwards, then the godbrother got up, finished the drink, took the cup, was going to go wash it. The host godbrother said, no, please, leave it for my servants. And they say, no, I'll do it. And that says, please, they'll benefit by being able to serve you. But the devotee was, so quote unquote humble, he went and washed the glass anyway. But if he was actually humble, he would have taken the senior godbrother's desire, even though it would appear that he's being served, but it's actually on the order of the senior godbrother for the benefit of the other. Understand? So humility is, there's the show of it, then there's the actuality. Right? So at least that we're trying to make a show, at least we have a value of humility. But we should be careful that the show that we do, whether it is actual humility. Yeah? Okay. Then it mentions here he's the super soul, the controller, and the savior. What is it? They have the verse in the Gita, what is it? Sarva Loka Maheshwara, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam. What's the first one?
Bhoktaram, yeah, he's the enjoyer. The controller, savior from all miseries. So here, the friend of all, he's the enjoyer, he's the controller, and he's the friend. Right? That's why he's the best, because he's all of these, and to the completest possible position. So that's why he should be worshipped. Because others aren't, no one else other than Krishna is the savior. Right? Technically not. People talk about Lord Shiva because he lives in the Brahman. But it doesn't mean he cannot himself give liberation. He may be used as a medium, as a devotee, then with the Lord's grace, then he'll give. But only Krishna's Mukunda, no one else. Right? Does that make sense? But by the devotees approaching the Lord, then we can become freed from the material world. So in this way, they become the medium for us. But that's why you should be connected to somebody who's connected to the Lord. That makes sense? Nobody else can free. So he's there. He's the super soul. He's there. He sees everything, knows everything. The super soul, it's his senses act, therefore ours act. Right? Virat Purush, he desires to taste. Therefore then the tongue and taste and the things to taste come into existence. So because he tastes, we can taste. Right? So that's the Bhoktaram. Right? Yajna Tapasam, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. So means all the things are supposed to, whatever is the results of yajna, are to go to the super soul. Right? To the Lord. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, he's the controller of everything. You control the planets, you control everything. Right? Suridam Sarva Bhuta, savior from all miseries. Okay? So no one else can do this. Therefore, he's the best. Right? Whatever you're looking for, he's got it. Right? He is worthy of our surrender, of our trust, of our affection. Right? He never lets anybody down. Right? Like that. Of course, we have to be careful how we define what letting down means. It means he's always there. It's not that changing the Band-Aid won't hurt. It's not that the lady stops being your mommy because when she pulled it off, it pulled out a hair and it hurt. Does that make sense? Right? We'll agree to that. But take that a little further, meaning your money goes away, your family goes away, people in your family die. These things happen because that's the results of their and your karma. But being there when you need in that emotional situation, Krishna's always there. Right? You know, when you have a friend that was there for you, doesn't mean that this problem didn't happen. Does that make sense? But they're there to help you through it. Right? So that's the proper definition. Not that, okay, I serve God, so nothing bad will ever happen to me again. Right? But that's, you're forgetting about the where you're surrendering to God. That's in the material world. The material world still is a material world. Right? It's still temporary. Birth, death, old age, disease still exist. But the point is, you surrender to Krishna, it won't bother you. Doesn't mean it won't happen, it won't bother you. Does that make sense? Like that. Then you'll never be disappointed. But if you use this other definition, it means nothing bad will happen. Yes, you will be disappointed and feel Krishna let you down. But that's your perception, because he's still there. Is that okay? Okay. And then, he's the most lovable object. He fulfills the needs of all. And he's the ultimate liberation devotional service. Now, look at these now, compared to there. Now, we went from Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam to Super Soul, right? Sarva Loka Maheshwaram to Controller, and Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, Savior from all miseries. Okay, right? Because a friend is one who helps you through troubles, right? That's how you can tell a friend. Are they there for you when the going gets rough?
Right? If they're not, then they're not that deep of a friend. If they're there when everything's great, yes, they're that kind of friend. But if they're there when things aren't great, then you know this is a real friend. Okay? Okay, now let's put this on here. Super soul, you know, and the most lovable object. Right? The one who is, in other words, why would you offer something to somebody? Right? Unless there's affection for them. Does that make sense? Why do you do service for somebody? Because you want to please them. Why? Because you like them. Right? So Krishna is the most lovable of all persons that things could be offered to. Does this make sense? Right? This is an example of meaning of vichar. Because otherwise we might think that these three verses actually have nothing to do with each other. But they're simply vichar on the same thing. Does that make sense? It's just giving different angles on the same point. Right? Does that make sense? He's the Lord of all sacrifice. Right? Everything should be offered to Him. But what are you doing? You're going through that with the mantra, through the ritual, through the ghee, through the offering, through the wood, through the fire. What are all those things? Those are all elements of the material energy that Krishna has entered as the super soul. Right? So that's the connection between those two. And why, now the opposite side, okay, that's him there is that. That's the tattva. But why would you be doing this? Rasa is because he's the most lovable person. Right? Because everyone's making sacrifice for something that they appreciate. Either another person or themselves or, you know, some ism. Right? Sacrifice is being made because they take that as lovable object. That makes sense? So he's the supreme lovable object. Then, who fulfills the needs of all? The controller means, now what does he do as a controller? He fulfills the needs of others. Right? The mother controls the child. But what does she do with that control? Pleases herself? Or fulfills the needs of the child. Does this make sense? So that means if you're in an a position of authority, that means you're using control to fulfill the needs of those who are your dependents. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Very important. Because this blows out the window the husband's, you know, I'm in charge and the wife follows. Okay, cool. But now what do you do with her being in charge? You fulfill the needs of the wife. Right? That's what control means. And who is the ultimate liberation in devotional service? Because he's the savior from all miseries, but then the ultimate saving from misery is to be situated in devotional service, right? That's beyond regular liberation, beyond just getting out of problems and that's going on. That's also called liberation, right? You're in a difficult situation materially, you're relieved from that, you're actually liberated from that difficult situation, right? So that's the lowest level. Then higher is you're liberated from the generic material influence, right? But the actual liberation is being situated in the spiritual world, in relationship to Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay, so then that being so, then he's the one we should hear about, right? Because all these things are what we want. We're looking for somebody to love. We're looking for one who takes care of us, right? And we're looking for to be freed from the difficulties that bother us, right? That's what everybody's looking for, right? And we're turning to so many things. You want to be freed from miseries. So you look to money, you look to people, you look to sense gratification, you look to power, position. But are they doing the job? No. So therefore it's Krishna who is the one. Lovable objects. We have so many lovable objects, but are they always lovable? Are there times when they're not? Are there times when they let us down? Yes or no? Right? And And who is fulfilling all needs? Those ones that are lovable are those in control of us? Do they always take care? Do they make sure everything works? No, there's always some shortcoming. Therefore, Krishna is the only one that what everybody's actually looking for, he actually fulfills. Does that make sense? Therefore, he's the one we should hear about. Right? You see what's going on in here? In the Sundar? Means they're taking technically this point of this chapter, because these are verses on this chapter. They're taking the point that by purifying it means those who are pure want to hear about the Lord, right? And in that association. That's the point. So now they're taking it and picking apart technically so that there can be nothing wrong. No doubts, no misgivings can come up. Right? So this is these are the very technical points that they're pointing out. Right? So it's not just, we're not just saying, because otherwise you would say, okay, great, we should hear about the Lord, but why? Why the Lord? Why not somebody else? So many nice love stories. I mean, songs are going on, you know, every day, all channels of all radio stations of the world. And they're all talking about some affection between one person and another, most of them. Right? And so, but they're not necessarily talking about Krishna, who's the ultimate of that. That makes sense? So everyone's looking for it, but it's not. So you have to clear all these doubts. Otherwise, why him? Right? Okay, you should hear about somebody who's important to you and that inspires you, but so why God? So now they're pointing out. Because everything you're looking for in anybody is found in him, not somebody else. Right? Whatever you find in somebody else is a portion of that that comes down through the universal form. Right? Some portion of these three, right, is there in the persons that are dear to us. But it's only found in its completeness with Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay.
Okay, fearless, he removes the bondage of... Now this is Sridhar Swami. So he's giving another angle. It means fearless, he removes the bondage. Right? So when you become fearless, as we discussed before, fearless means not afraid of our relationship with Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that. So that means that's the ultimate, means liberation and devotional service. Nimisha Ishvara. So here, Ishvara means he fulfills the needs of all. That's the actual meaning of controller. Because you don't control for yourself, you control for rasa. Right? If the child is uncontrolled, what do? Anything that's beneficial to anybody, including themselves? Generally not. Right? The kids will be crazy. They'll do anything that just comes to their mind. So they have to be controlled. And in controlling them, then that control is for their benefit. Right? So the control is their need. They want to experience things, but they don't know how to do it. They're not experienced, so they don't know what to experience. They want to be happy, but they don't really know what makes them happy. Does that make sense? So they're controlled so that their desires can actually be fulfilled. Right? So that means you also need to know what are their needs. Otherwise, how you'll fulfill them. Right? Right? So that's why the, you know, devotional and the Varna Vedic, you know, social systems are given. So you actually know what do people need. Then if you're in control, then you fulfill them. If you're not in control, then you turn to those who will. That makes sense? So everybody knows who does what. Does that make sense?
And then most dear to Sarvatma, you know, most dear to everybody. Because everybody can relate to God, right?
Even the atheists, their whole stand, their whole existence depends on him not being there. You know what I'm saying? So even they...
he becomes even for them the most dear object, because without them, their status as an atheist doesn't exist. Right? Because people who are atheists are actually proud of being atheists. It's not just that, God, what's this God? I never thought about God. What's the need of God? That's an atheist, but it's ignorant. But it's, you know what I'm saying? But innocent. So you could preach to them. Oh, he's this, that. Oh, really? Okay. But it's not, no, I don't believe in God. They're very proud of it. Right? So that's their ego. That means their values, the mind, everything is based on that. That's very central for them. So without God, so he actually indirectly is the most dear person. Because without him, not existing, of course, they don't have any standing. Their whole ego and their whole attitude on life doesn't have any meaning. That makes sense? So that's the thing. Krishna is so, no one can get away from him. You know, he's there, and, you know, it's just recognizing. Okay. Now, this is important in here, because the next point is that you want to establish now, we've established on a lot of talking, because this whole canto is talking a lot on the utilization of the universal form for dissolving material existence, right? In its proper application through Naishkarmya. But now he makes the point is that we cannot take the universal form as the ultimate shelter, right? Because it's technically an illusory manifestation, right? Because we think it's valuable, because it's been empowered with Krishna's potencies. So we'll take this whole kind of like process as important. It's uplifting. But it's not ultimate, because the point is who's the person behind the universal form? That's what's of interest. You understand? That's what we're trying to get to, is that person who is going to interact with us. Does that make sense? Because we'll say, well, I'm interacting with the universal form. No, universal form's interacting with the universal form, maybe through you. You know what I'm saying? Okay. The man, he sees, okay, the masculine potency that's there in the universal form of the particular nature then flowing towards its equal match in the feminine and vice versa. Right? But it's still not you and God. It's you're the medium for him to interact with himself. But we claim to be the controllers and enjoyers. So therefore, we identify that I'm this flow of masculine energy and she's that flow of feminine energy. But actually, it's just universal form going to universal form. We just happen to be sitting in the seat. Does that make sense? In other words, that particular material manifestation of gross and subtle body matching with that other gross and subtle body, the potencies that are there interact with each other. We just, because that's our desire, we happen to be placed in those bodies to experience that. Does that make sense? You know, you want to see a particular show, so they put you in a particular theater. But the theater is going on whether you sit there or not. You understand? You know, believe it or not, you clear out everybody from the audience and the actors will perform the same drama. And you fill it up with people and they'll still perform the same drama. Right? So that's the thing. Now you think about it. Okay, now let's say you go to a theatrical performance. Now, at the end of the performance, what was important? The actors or the audience? Who gets praised at the end of the performance? Yeah, the actors all go, yeah, great audience, fabulous, you know, we love you, you know. Like that, okay. No, it's the other way around. Right? So think about this. Why is it because you're in this body that the theatrics or the modes of nature that are going on between the universal elements of the universal form that are happening by the modes of nature, not because of you. And you're there in the audience watching. Why is it you get the credit? Right? Why do you think you should get it? No, the universal form has done it. Why are you taking the credit? Right? So wouldn't you call that insane? The audience stood up and started praising themselves. Wow, didn't I do such a great drama? Oh, I'm so fabulous. Didn't you see how I said that to this one and how that did that? And everyone else would go, who is this guy? You know, someone can call 9/11, please. Right? Does that make sense? That's why it said the living entity in the material consciousness is insane. Okay? So this is why, even though it's very useful as a tool, because it separates one's connection to the attachments of the material world by putting them in proper focus, but it's not actually a direct relationship with the Lord. It means directly interacting. That's what the Lord desires. Right? Means it's the first step that you recognize that what's going on is actually the Lord. But it's not the ultimate. The ultimate is then to be in the Lord's higher pastimes, because these are lower pastimes. These are pastimes done just for us. Because the jivas can be influenced by material energy, therefore the Lord takes on these pastimes that the living entity can take part in. But their experience and consciousness is mundane. But the Lord's still just interacting and playing with himself. But his superior pastimes are in the spiritual world, where there he interacts with his internal potency, not the external. Right? And so there, then, those are superior. Because those are based on actual affection. Because that's affection for God rather than affection for ourselves. Does that make sense? Is this okay, or it's not getting too freaky? Okay. Okay. Because, yeah. The residents of the spiritual world, they love Krishna and want to please Krishna, not for themselves, because they just love him so much. Something very foreign in here. Here you love somebody because of what you get from them. There, it's not what you get from them, they just love him anyway. Right? Because if that was a fact, then why is the 8th verse Aslishyava Paradatam Vinashtamam Adarshanam Mama Hatam Karotava? Right? Why is it that? That does not fly here. Anybody wants to know? Don't try it. It does not work. You don't operate the 9-to-1 formula, it does not work. Right there, it's you get nothing back. Does that make sense? Here it's got to be 9 times. Okay? So it's just very different. Very different. So they're pointing out is that's why it's only used as an interim stage to get one from material endeavor to spiritual. In other words, we're doing material endeavor with material consciousness. We want to get to spiritual endeavor with spiritual consciousness. So in between the two is seemingly material endeavor with spiritual consciousness. Right? Because the gross always follows the subtle. So if the consciousness is spiritual, then the gross is spiritualized. And then with time it dissolves, and then it gives way to the spiritual. Does that make sense? Verse 39. After this, Sukadeva Goswami describes meditation on the universal form of the Lord, and then speaking against that meditation, he describes devotional service. 139. Quote, one should concentrate his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
who alone distributes himself in so many manifestations, just as ordinary persons create thousands of manifestations in dreams. Nimesha. Jiva Goswami means to show that while dreams are ultimately created by the Lord, they are created by Him according to the living entity's desires. We ought not conclude that since the living entity's dreams are false, the material world is false. Neither our internal dreams nor the external material world are as real as the spiritual world, since it is eternal and they are temporary. But as creations of the Lord, they are real enough to overwhelm the tiny wayward jivatma. Precisely because of their potency to captivate uncountable eternal spirit souls, this verse concludes, one must concentrate the mind on Him, the only all-blissful absolute truth. Otherwise, one will be misled and will cause his own degradation.
So that's why it's used. It's just like a knife is used, but it's very dangerous. Right? You use it right, you'll get a good result, but if you're not careful, you'll get cut. Right? That's why metaphysics are given after the concept, that means the practicals of karma and jnana and their combination. Does that make sense? Right? Because you'll see, in the Gita, the metaphysics are given after, right, the devotional service, right, from chapter 13. And in the Bhagavatam, it's the 11th canto. Right? It's given after. Because only once you're situated properly in devotional service can you use them properly without getting cut. Otherwise, the karmis are using them to their advantage, and they're getting a great result. But they're getting entangled. Does that make sense? Something you take something like astrology. If it's used in Krishna consciousness, it can be very useful. But if it's not used in Krishna consciousness, it's entangling. Of course, it's a gold chain rather than an iron chain of other non-Vedic mundane entanglements. Does that make sense? But it's still entangling. So all these technical points, they can only be put into place when you have the right consciousness and right view. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Srila Sridhar Swami comments, this verse means that one should concentrate his mind on the Lord, tam eva satya bhajate, bhajeta, who alone distributes himself in so many manifestations. Sa eka sarva dhi, dhi means minds. Vrit yanu bhuta sarva. One should not be attached to anyone or anything else, na antara, na anyatra sajet, because from that attachment, yata, one falls, atmapati, into the material world of repeated birth and death. The Lord alone experiences everything, anubhuta sarva, with his senses.
So here, alone he is doing, we just happen to be there when it goes by, right? It's just like this. You've plugged the plug into the wall and it goes to the machine. And the machine is running, right? You can touch the current. You can touch the wire. And you can feel the current. But does it make you run? No, it makes the machine run. So it's going from the plug, from the generator, to the machine. Just you happen to come by and experience the electricity. You understand? So it's only the Lord who is experiencing the elements of the senses to the sense objects. But we just happen to be there when it goes on, and so because we claim it's ours, so therefore we experience something. But otherwise, if you're experiencing it, why is it when you do it, as you're doing it, it's just going away? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The residents of the spiritual world, they want to always do devotional service. Instead, they're not satisfied, meaning it's so nice and it's so fulfilling that they want to keep on doing that. But it's real. It's got substance. Material world, we want to keep doing it because as we do it, it falls away. It's like an illusion. So unless we keep doing it, the experience is lost. But in the spiritual world, it's not lost. It remains. But then you could add to it. Does it make sense? So there's a difference. So that's why it has to be done again and again and again, because there's nothing there. Only if you connect it to Krishna then there's something there. Does that make sense? Like, you know, you must have all had times when you're out or something, you have to eat in restaurants or outside food, right? And if you go to decent places, the first day or two, it's nice because of the, you know, way they cook and this and that. But after the third, fourth day, you notice there's no substance to it. It's not satisfying. You'd rather just eat some simple, like khichdi, some simple prasad, than this very elaborate, non-devotional food. That make sense? Right? So the point is its connection to Krishna that is satisfying, not the thing itself, in the material world. Right? So that's the whole, whatever so this universal form is happening, and the Lord's, he's interacting, it's his pastime. We tap into it, we claim it's us, so we get something from it. Right? But you can tell that it's not actually us experiencing it, otherwise why is it we're not satisfied? It doesn't actually exist, because you can't get it. Because what you're trying to get is the external, it's not the external, it's the Lord's potency through it. You know, it's like you try to keep touching the wire that you're going to get some juice out of it. You know? But it's not, it's the electricity that's doing something. It's not the touch of the copper or anything, you know, the color of the copper. It's not, it's the electricity going through it. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So we'll end here. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaur.